The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Pulse on CFRO 100.5 FM and online at thepulse.coopradio.org, where you can find all of our previous shows and interviews. You can also download our podcast at any time, wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'm David Ball. Well, in our interview today, we're talking to freelance journalist Ali Laube, who wrote an article investigating the conditions within the Vancouver Police Department's jail as experienced by those protesters arrested on the viaduct in June during global Black Lives Matter protests. The viaduct is a site that formerly destroyed and displaced the once black neighborhood of Vancouver, Hogan's Alley. But those arrested say that conditions within Vancouver jail were dismal, especially in light of COVID-19, in which guards were not universally wearing masks, and prisoners were unable to get hand sanitizer or masks or even have flushing toilets, and said that bodily fluids were in the cells and on the walls and uncleaned from previous prisoners. Here's Ali Laube. Thank you so much for joining us, Ali, here on The Pulse on CFRO.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me about how your article in the Taii about Vancouver's jail as experienced by Black Lives Matter protesters came about.
Well, I was very plugged into what was going on in the downtown Eastside community, have been over the last year or so. I've been living here for about a year. So I was paying a lot of attention, naturally, to what was going on in Strathcona over by Hogan's Alley on the viaducts. And I had friends who were very active in the process of setting up those camps and of, you know, manning those camps. And I had friends who were arrested when the police showed up. So I had a lot of contacts on the inside already who were either posting about it on social media because I'm so involved with activists in Vancouver, or who were just DMing me personally to be like, hey, this experience is something you should be paying attention to.
So let's go back a bit. Tell us about, remind us about this Hogan's Alley protest that was over the site of the former black neighborhood in Vancouver that was demolished to make the viaducts.
That's right. Yes. Hogan's Alley was the most prominent black community in Vancouver and still is the most prominent black community in Vancouver's history. It was eventually demolished to make room for the viaducts, which we all use now. The city said a few years ago that they were going to take down the viaducts again and consider rebuilding the social housing and community centers for the black community, but that hasn't actually happened yet.
So this was a very tangible manifestation of Black Lives Matter in Vancouver, and as the whole North America was engulfed in the protests in June after George Floyd's murder in Minneapolis, that they set up a occupation right there at that site.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had different camps all over the viaducts, and it was a peaceful protest. So I wasn't there physically. I haven't been able to go to very many protests because I'm immunocompromised, so I've had to do a lot of my activism from home. But I know that it was quiet, you know? I was walking around my neighborhood, it was quiet, there wasn't any problems. People who were there said that it was really just folks sitting around fires. And the cops showed up in the morning, no injunction, which is standard, but no one knew they were coming, and they showed up and made arrests, and that was that.
So tell us what you heard about their experience in jail, because you're the only one that I've seen report on this yet.
Yeah, so there were reporters who were talking about, you know, protesters arrested this morning on the Georgia viaducts. But the reason why I got inside experiences was because I did have so many connections already, so folks trusted me within the community. A lot of the people who were arrested were feeling very traumatized and were going through a hard time right after the arrests, so they weren't talking to media. I was able to talk to them because of that trust. And what they told me was essentially that not only is it always, of course, going to be traumatizing to be physically manhandled and detained and arrested by the police, especially if you're a racialized person or an otherwise visible minority, but also the state of the facilities that they were in between when they were arrested and when they got out of the detention center on Cambie were described as pretty disgusting and unhygienic, which is, of course, a risk right now during the COVID pandemic.
What? Tell me some of the things that you found out what were inside the cells. It's a pretty gross list.
Oy, pretty nasty indeed. some of the things that were described, blood on the walls was the one that was the most attention getting, I suppose. Both of my interviewees describe blood on the walls in the cell, which is insane to think about because the cells are supposed to be cleaned after each use. Also, there was, according to Faven Kidani, unidentified gel on the floor. Who knows what that was? broken plumbing, so like the toilets weren't flushing properly. Just like dirty, gross, cold, bad time. No PPE, no access to hand sanitizer.
And they asked for hand sanitizer.
They asked for hand sanitizer and didn't get it.
What about the guards? Were they wearing PPE at all?
Apparently it's optional. So, I mean, some of them would have been and others wouldn't have been. And, I mean, I wasn't there, so I can't say with utmost certainty, but I know that the folks who were arrested said that only some of the VPD officers and guards were wearing masks.
I see so many aspects of this story that I find it very interesting window into a lot of issues that happen to be the same sorts of issues that Black Lives Matter was raising. So prison justice and prison rights, health and safety, racism in the justice system, and also as labor rights issues in here too, like are guards properly protected? Are they actually endangering the prisoners who are under their charge also? Because the guards are coming in and out, the police officers, and the prisoners are kind of trapped, like literally.
Exactly. Yeah, and detention facilities, you know, detention facilities versus jails. So this jail in particular that I'm talking about in the article, it is only a detention facility, meaning that people aren't held there for long periods of time. They're detained there while they're awaiting release when they get their charges or don't. So the ins and outs are really rapid. It's actually higher risk in a lot of ways than higher security prisons because it's just constantly folks going in and out. If the cops bring you over to the precinct, like you're in there even if you didn't do anything. So it's a much like broader pool of folks, and you also get people who are going to be systemically targeted by the police in there, which is vulnerably affecting these communities that may not have access to things like private healthcare to deal with these risks that they're facing in detention centers.
So you talked to the Vancouver Police and the Vancouver Police Board for your story. What did you hear from both?
Well, the Vancouver Police, they didn't tell me much. I didn't actually get an interview with them. All of the correspondence I had with them was over email. I did file some Freedom of Information requests to them, but I haven't heard back yet. So what I got from them were statements. They didn't respond to a question that I asked them about their health and safety protocols, which was why they couldn't release them. So I'm still not sure why they refused to release those. But other than that, it was really just information about the Vancouver jail that they told me.
So it's maximum security facility. They say that they have protocols to protect detainees and jail staff, but wouldn't give them to you, which seems, what is this something you could help escape the jail if you found out they were using hand sanitizer or some spray or something? Like, it seems, why not release that?
I really don't understand. I honestly don't understand. I asked them several times in plain language how releasing health and safety protocols would jeopardize the health and safety of prisoners. They didn't tell me, so I don't have any answer to that question.
Now, were the demonstrators ever charged, or I guess ever convicted or sentenced in any way, or were they just held and released?
They were held and released with charges awaiting court dates that haven't happened yet.
But they haven't yet been proved to have committed the crimes that they're accused of. So essentially, it's like a remand. They're there awaiting processing, but they're not there convicted of anything yet.
Exactly, which is why you get so many people in and out, like I was saying before.
What kind of issues does this raise for you, like in terms of concerns that could be addressed? And has this ever been raised before, to your knowledge?
Yeah, definitely. I have never been detained in the Cambay facility myself. And again, I was not able to be arrestable at the time of protest because I'm immunocompromised. So I didn't experience any of this firsthand, but I have definitely been targeted by police in my life, and I've definitely been made to feel unsafe and uncomfortable around police, even more so as an immunocompromised person right now. You know, that was horrifying to me, because if I did make the decision to be arrestable, which I considered, what if I'd ended up in that facility myself? I have such a low immune system that could have taken my life. It's a lot of power that people have by forcing folks into a closed space during a pandemic. And I feel like it is their responsibility as a public institution and as part of the government to take care of our health as Canadians. So I really do feel strongly about that. And I do feel that sense of entitlement to knowing what the Vancouver Police Department is planning on doing on this issue.
Now, they were ordered by a judge, actually, at one point to clean up their facilities. And I know that Pivot Legal Society here on the Downtown East Side has also called for an improvement of conditions there. What did you hear from them?
Pivot talked to me about a lot of things that I had questions about regarding the actual legal processes for detaining folks at protests. I hadn't done a lot of reporting on that in the past, so they helped me understand. And they also walked me through some of the risks that are associated with detaining folks during this time. As well, the folks who I talked to from Pivot were all visible minorities themselves, and I think that they understand quite well why detention centers like this tend to hold BIPOC folks, tend to hold even like disabled folks, visibly LGBTQIA2S+ folks, anyone that the police can pick up off the street. And we just recently saw the end of street checks in Vancouver, which is great. But the problem is that it's mostly folks who are facing disproportionate violence who end up in these facilities. These are people who are less valued by the government already. So to bring them into a place where you're putting their health and safety at risk, on top of already the trauma of being forced into a cell by a police officer against your will, it's a lot for people to handle. And Pivot gave me that important perspective on the issue and how legal documentation can be used to defend the rights of people who can't defend their own rights while they're in jails.
I thought it was interesting that Pivot's lawyer also kind of didn't seem to think it would be enough for them to simply to sanitize the cells properly and remove the blood and gels. For them, it was about the number of, why do we put so many people there awaiting trial or remand? Like a systemic question.
Yeah, why are we doing this at all right now? You know? That's a good question. It's a valid question to ask. Is it worth it? I mean, if you ask me, that's a very complicated question to answer. And I think that more than anything else, it is very crucial that people who don't absolutely need to be taken in by law enforcement are not being taken in by law enforcement at all. And I would argue that protesters are part of that group.
Anything else you kind of wanted to say about questions that you have just having researched and written and talking to all these people? Like, what else do you want to know that we don't know yet?
I really want them to get back to my freedom of information requests, because I asked them for their police reports, for the names of their officers, for their health and safety protocols, for all of these things that I haven't had access to yet. I feel like I was largely kept in the dark by the Vancouver Police Department during this whole thing, because they refused to have an in-depth conversation with me. And I want to have that conversation so that I can report on it. That's what I really want to do. And I want to figure out how they're going to respond to all of these allegations, because it's not acceptable to just not respond and continue to act this way when we may be seeing more waves of the COVID-19 pandemic. And when we are almost certainly going to be seeing more protests. So this is a discussion that isn't over yet. And I think that I'll be paying very close attention to it in the future.
It's such an interesting window into a world that sadly we don't pay enough attention to in media. And, you know, I think prisoners who go to these jails are often just told to accept this is how it is, or they don't have access to reporters or to like the platforms to speak out. So it's interesting when a protester like the folks with Black Lives Matter got a window into this and used that that platform then to kind of draw attention or shine a magnifying glass. Like it's a very interesting thing that happens. It's sort of actually a privilege of the protesting that's also, you know, unfortunately you're in jail too, but you're using that position to like help draw attention to a systemic problem.
Mm-hmm. Because protesters are people who don't usually go to jail on the regular. So they're going to respond in a different way than people who are used to being detained to the facilities in jails. Someone like my interviewees, Isla and Faven, they hadn't spent a lot of time in jails before. So when they got into that facility, they were horrified. Whereas if you're a unhoused or precariously housed person, you're more likely to have regular run-ins with the police. You're more likely to be detained by the police. There's so many different identities that intersect with how targeted you're going to be. But when they go into jails, you know, it's not new. And that was really what I heard from Pivot, was when I told them, hey, there are these horrific conditions within the Vancouver jail. They were like, yeah, of course, duh. Like, jail is...
Yeah, we've been talking about this.
Yeah, they're like, jail's disgusting. Like, we know this. It's not a safe place. So clearly this is an issue that the public just hasn't been paying attention to.
Well, I wanted to thank you for shining a light on it as well and helping lift up these voices. It's fascinating and I think pretty disturbing to many of the listeners.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that I got to fascinate and disturb. That is my goal.
Let us know if you get those FOIs back too, because we'd be really keen on hearing what the police are guarding in their documents they don't want to release.
Yeah, I certainly will. If I get them back, I will do whatever I can to get that information out there, and hopefully they're not too heavily redacted. Fingers crossed.
Just hope so. Thank you so much, Ali, for joining us here and for the work you did on this story. I look forward to seeing what's next.
Yeah, thank you for talking to me about it.
Take care. And that was freelance journalist Ali Laube, who wrote an article in the Tyee about the incident that you can find out about called Vancouver Jail Filthy, COVID Risk High, Say Arrested Hogan's Alley Protesters. You can find that at thetyee.ca.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.